an enormous amount of work, an enormous investment of time. By and large, these quilts from the Mid-Atlantic, that these masterpieces, as you identify them, was this primarily upper-class women who were doing this?
Initially, it was. When we look at a lot of the women in the earlier period, we can look them up in the census records. We can look them up, their husbands up in the probate records. We can see the value of their land and their estates and whatever. And we can see that these are certainly women of the gentry or upper classes who had the leisure time to complete these really beautiful pieces. And that's one reason we call this Eye on Elegance. You know, there's sort of a persistent myth that early quilts were all just sort of made of scraps that our frugal foremothers saved from every little project, and oh yes, they spent all this time sewing together scraps. Well, if you're at that level of society that you're that desperate, you don't have time enough on your hands to sew hundreds of pieces of scraps. These are definitely the products of leisure, and when you look at the fabrics, you know these were bought at the store with the quilt in mind. They're thought through. The color schemes are thought through. They've given thought to what goes next to each other and what the overall design is going to be. These are well thought out artistic creations. So that is certainly true in the first third of the century, let's say. But as the Industrial Revolution progresses, as there's greater material comfort throughout a larger segment of American society, you have the development of machine loomed fabrics, you know, steam and water powered machinery is cranking out fabric and is printing fabric. So you go from the very highly skilled and time-consuming block printing method of creating printed cottons to roller printing, which goes through the machine much more rapidly and covers much more fabric in a shorter period of time. So all of this brings the cost down. And so more people can afford more of a larger quantity of nice things. And so when you look at the Baltimore albums, it's really an example of what I like to call the democratization of elegance. Because
this was later in the period.
Later in the period, by the 1840s, when the Baltimore album craze is hitting, when you look up these people in the city directories of Baltimore and the censuses that will give the husband, at least, the husband's occupation, some of them are booksellers or dressmakers or bricklayers or printers. You know, this is the artisan class. This is not the upper leisure class anymore. And they're participating in the seeking of expressing their refinement and participating in the creation of elegant things, because, you know, we're an aspirational society, and so they wanted to have pretty things around them just like the richer people, and they were able to accomplish this by mid-century because of the Industrial Revolution making the materials more affordable.
By the time this exhibit is over, in the fall of 2015, these quilts will have been on display for about a year.
11 months.
I would think they're pretty fragile. How do you protect them?
Well, one of the things that we do is that about six or seven of them are actually not hanging straight. They're actually at an angle, and they're resting on canvas slings that we have created for them. So even at just a slight 15-degree angle, gravity is not pulling on them anymore. They're resting on their little slings. And so that is what we've done for our heaviest and most fragile quilts. The others are actually in pretty good shape, and there are several quilts from Maryland and Virginia of this period from the collection that I did not show for precisely that reason. I just didn't feel they could be up for that long at all. I also don't know where the heck they would go in the gallery, because we have stuffed quilts in every corner we can possibly fit. We normally have quilt exhibits with about 18 quilts, and we've fit 36 into the gallery at the moment. We also have three quilts that will rotate off after 5.5 months halfway through the show, because I mentioned Amelia Locke of Winchester earlier. She and one other quilter's work, we're lucky to have more than one quilt by these quilters. And so we will switch out and put the other quilt by these quilters on display for the second half of the show. So we're very mindful that these are old pieces and we need to treat them carefully and gently.
I think of 19th century beds as being much smaller than our beds today. How do these quilts come to be sort of modern-sized?
Well, I think when you think of beds, sometimes you've been to a historic house and you see a little twin-size mm-hmm. bed, you know, sort of approximately twin-size. Beds weren't standardized until much, much later. And if you think of some of those beds, a lot of them were big double or more size beds, and a lot of them were fairly high. So it's hard to know exactly how much of these quilts were meant to drop over the sides and how high a bed they were intended to be on. But yeah, they do strike you as quite large. The most common size for these is 100 to 105 inches. You know, we have probably half of these are between 105, 108 inches on either side. It's just extraordinary. And you do kind of think, wow, that must have been one big bed, one big high bed. But remember, you know, some beds needed steps to get into. And, you know, and especially if you're in an elegant household, you might have had a nice big high bed for people to get into and display the best quilt on.
I see.
I don't know. I'm kind of speculating because I'm not a bed historian, but
you're a fabric historian.
Right.